This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, February 12th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We have one ex-pope, one State of the Union special speech, a third Korean nuclear missile test, and it takes a lot these days to cover up the real dirt that's going on underneath. Think of the Congo. Think of occupied Palestine. Think of the social injustice that is spreading a shadow across the country as the gap between the very wealthy and everyone else continues to deepen. First, the weather. National Weather Service has this for us. It's basically in a holding pattern. Chance of drizzle today, highs in the mid-40s. Overnight lows in the low 40s and a chance of rain. We've got about the same pattern for tomorrow. Expect highs around 43, light winds, and overnight lows around 40, 41 degrees. Again, winds dropping off somewhat towards the evening. The alternative forecast has a waxing crescent flower moon in Aquarius. Moon's one day old. The synodic report has this for us. So leafy vegetables and annuals that produce above ground. Well, indeed, they produce above ground right now, don't they? In fact, they might be producing right on your kitchen drain board in the window. If you sprout grains at this time, they pick up as much sun as they can through the window, and they actually have a greater nutritional value than if you put them in the ground and wait around for a while. So that is something to do. And according to the synodic forecast, that's probably going to be a successful project. The biodynamicists have the moon in Aquarius. It's a good air sign. It's the time to sow flowering plants. So that would be in agreement with the synodic forecast. The sidereal report, moon in Pisces. Good time for planting soft fruit. Yes, it is, in fact. You might want to think about bare root fruit trees right now as they are beginning to emerge from dormancy. Yeah, less chance of your new trees going into root shock if you get them in the ground before they right on that cusp, right before they emerge from dormancy. And now with our feet placed firmly in Cascadian earth, we move on. We are going to, this morning, be taking up some social justice issues with Pear, co-founder, development director, and mentor, Pippa Arendt. Everyone, of course, waiting on the edge of their seat to see what the president is going to say. One thing we could almost count on him not saying is what we really want to know about drones and the deployment of drones and the targeted assassinations, and there's really no other word for it. It is an assassination of American citizens anywhere in the world. Closer to home, Seattle Mayor McGinnis has firmly rejected, due to enormous public opposition, the idea of two small so-called surveillance drones. Here's the thing of it. In any asymmetrical war theater, you're going to have things like the enemy co-opting your tools. And that's exactly what's going to happen with the drones. So as we sit by, the president makes his speech. The social structures crumble under his feet as he's speaking. The gap between the rich and the poor continues to widen. And somehow, in pockets around the country and here in Portland, organizations like PEAR come into existence, doing enormous good amongst a population that's virtually, that is not possible to reach. They have to come to you. It's a very difficult task. And Pear apparently has succeeded brilliantly in an arena where social justice issues are hard, very hard fought. Pippa, good morning. We're so glad you could be with us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
I doubt that President Obama is going to give a nod towards organizations like yours. There aren't any others like yours, and you don't receive government funding. Why is that?
There's three of us that founded PEAR 11 years ago, myself, Beth Burns, and Joy Cartier, and we were the teachers at the Salvation Army Greenhouse School, which was a really wonderful program. However, it did take some federal and some county money, and we saw when and how that didn't work. We saw when taking that kind of money requires us, the program, to play a kind of numbers games where the value becomes less on the relationship and individual development and more on creating quote-unquote outcomes. And let me just say, outcomes are awesome. That's what we want. We want developmental progress. But we don't want our values to be based on those outcomes. And when you get into some of those money games with some kinds of grants and federal money, it can cause one to run counter to one's mission. And so we saw from the beginning that we just didn't want to do that. And so we structured the financial piece of our program to take money from individuals and from family foundations and from granting organizations that, while desiring of positive outcomes, would quite frankly trust us to do our job. You know, they would see us, they would evaluate us, and once they trust us, just allow us to use their money for good in our community. So that's the kind of money we like.
Yeah, and the kind of results that are contributing factor, I think, to probably a stronger culture, stronger society. Could you give listeners a little idea of what it looks like at street level? Do you what kind of outreach do you do? You more or less have people come to you and who are, as you've said, they are not even at risk, that you are trying to get people up to the at-risk level.
True that. Yeah, so let me back up
I want to be very clear about this. Not that any of the people who are participants in the program are on a scale or hierarchy. It's simply that this is where society has more or less parked them so that they can be ignored. And this is a way of taking people out of those spots where they can be silenced and ignored.
Yeah, so we work with kids that are 15 to 24 years old that are homeless. But I think the more important point is they are parentless, or quite frankly, in some ways, community-less. That's what these kids are really suffering from. And so we have a space that's on 6th and Flanders where we welcome them in. We don't do any outreach. In part, that's simply a logistical issue. We don't have the staff to do outreach. And quite frankly, the more kids we have in here, the less well we're able to work individually with each one. So we really just count on the kids to bring other kids as needed into our program. So the kids essentially do the outreach for us. When they see a kid who has recently popped up on the streets, they've been kicked out of their home, they've been kicked out of they're 18 years old, so they're kicked out of the foster care home, or they're 16 and there's been some kind of abuse in whatever kind of environment they've been living in, they land up on the streets, they meet other kids, these other kids know about our program, and so those kids bring in the new kids into our program. One of the reasons they do that is because they are, I think, proud and not ashamed of our program. They don't call themselves clients here. I don't call them clients. They call me teacher. I call them student. And so the environment here is one of safety, dignity, and respect. So we'll have, in our 11 years of being open, we've enrolled about 2,500 kids, but each day we'll see about 35 to 45 kids. And these are all kids that are in our space all at once, which functions sort of like a one-room schoolhouse where we have our mentors. We'll usually have about 100 mentors at any time, which breaks down to about two or three per day. So we'll have staff and volunteers and whichever kids are in pair. And each day is a beautiful cacophony of who knows what, just meeting individual needs as they arise. And that could be anything from taking a kid to the hospital, to helping a kid go to court, to helping a kid learn how to write a resume, to mentoring a kid through a difficult emotional issue, sort of mentoring, like, how do you be angry without aggression? How do you stand up for your rights? How do you not capitulate but still love someone? You know, all of those things that people learn from their community, you know, these are values that you learn from your community, and these kids don't have that. So that's the role that we're serving.
I have one final quick question. I do want to, as we bring this to a close, ask for where people can get more information and perhaps volunteer. But are there other models for this kind of the way this is set up? Because it seems that a lot of the success is because you are not bound to any particular, government of a format, an institutionalized format. And I think that the goal here is to institutionalize these people so that they can be locked up and forgotten.
Right. So our goal, I would say, is personal development. It without the cliche around that. So our goal is to take kids who are post-risk, to engage them, to mentor them one-on-one, and to then help them transform actually their actual value systems from a value system based on a survival to a value system based on thriving in our community.
Pippa, we're out of time. I've got to just wrap this up. I apologize. There's a lot more. And as we spoke earlier this morning with Pippa, we're going to hopefully get some of the voices of people who are participating in the program and do a little bit more on this, because there's a great deal to be learned. This is exactly and precisely what Obama is not going to be talking about, because it's an example of a very successful program that has gone its own way. It's independent of all the strings that are attached to the type of funding that is associated with very often with programs that have recidivism rates that are staggering. We will put links to the PIPA website on the KBOO website so the listeners can get more information that way. And I want to thank PIPA enormously for being on the air today. I've got to quickly run through some news from around Cascadia. We've got more news on Gillnetters. The Oregon Court of Appeals has ordered the state into, like, hang on before it begins enforcing a plan that Kitzhaber loved to move non-tribal Gillnetters off the main stem of the Lower Columbia River. This is a huge significance to tribal fisheries. And a very strange situation is emerging with Chris Dorner still on the loose. We have this. Officer Scott Denick used Vicodin, Xanax, marijuana, and who knows what all else, was arrested for drunk driving. He claimed to have PTSD, and the litany continues. Yet an arbitrator has ordered Chief of Police Mike Reese to reinstate Denick with a 3-month suspension. Reese argues that Denick showed repeated bad judgment, engaged in illegal behavior, had significant problems maintaining sobriety, and failed to take responsibility for his actions. And in India, this arbitrator said that Reese made some small errors in the report. So, guess what? We have Officer Scott Dunnick once more on the streets of Portland. And that's it for Cascadia. We have a great many more stories that we did not get to. We have an interview that I did want to bring you with David Swanson on the protest 15 years ago against the war in Iraq. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. Janet Anderson, engineer of the show today. Kathleen Stevenson's the KBAM News and Public Affairs Director. Got the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor an evening with Scott Silber, speaking on Threat to Themselves and Others, Intervention on Corporate Addiction to Power Before It's Too Late. He'll be in Portland on Sunday, February 17th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue, at the corner of 12th and Salmon. Scott Silber is National Director of National Intervention, who are calling for a 28th constitutional amendment to eliminate corporate personhood. More information about Scott and the event can be found at kbu.fm/ScottSilber2013.
Flashpoints, legal scholar and founder of the Center for Constitutional Rights, Michael Ratner, labels Obama's drone assassination program a crime against humanity. Also, the Pope steps down. Why? What does it have to do with the Vatican Bank? We'll look into that. All that coming up on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. First, we turn our attention to the Pope. Theories are abounding this week now that the first Pope in seven centuries is resigning his office. But as always, the most direct way to the truth behind the world's oldest corporation is simply by following the money, and specifically the Vatican Bank money. Now, this is Kevin Annette, our next guest, writing, and he goes on to say, let's put to rest, first of all, the fallacy that, quote, looming scandals about child rape and cover-up are behind Joseph Ratzinger's resignation. That's just the cover story. Kevin Annette, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thanks, Dennis.
It's good to have you with us. Kevin has been fighting to reveal the government church genocide that was carried out against Indigenous people in Canada for some many years, and he knows a great deal about what's been going on in the church. Now, it is true that Ratzinger was a cover-up man for the child molestation epidemic.